podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Jones! Bowden!
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match!
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket and our review of the LV Insurance Test Series, England-New Zealand. Well, it took New Zealand really very little time, half an hour today, to finish off the victory at Edgbaston. The fourth day was almost non-event. Actually, what a shame, really, for a packed house that would have loved a day's cricket in the hot sunshine and to see England thriving, but it was anything but that. And New Zealanders win a rare series in England, and generally, Simon, a chastening day for England.
Yeah, New Zealand's first test victory in terms of series in England since 1999, when it was all so bad. Those who remember that will know that England was bottom of the pile, and then gradually they turned it round under Duncan Fletcher and Nasser Hussain, and then have thrived largely for the last 20 years or so. Okay, of late they have been not so good. I suppose the question we should ask is how bad is it? I mean, it was an awful performance from England, an awful third day, certainly with the bat. I mean, it was a really, really poor batting performance. How bad is it? And we asked that question against the context of what's to come, I think, because India are coming, five test matches, and then England go to Australia. And those are huge challenges. It's fine, you know, the last year or so, England have won in South Africa, they won in Sri Lanka, they beat Pakistan at home, they beat West Indies at home, but they are sort of bottom of the first division, if you like. If you think of, you know, the way the power structure is in test cricket, they are bottom of the first division. There's New Zealand, there's Australia, and there is India. And then the other teams that I mentioned, they're sort of in a second division, if you like, if you want to frame it in those terms. But England's goal is to go and win the Ashes. So how bad is it? How much chance have they got to beating India at home and going to Australia and winning?
Well, I think it depends who they pick is the first answer to that question.
Is it as simple as that, though?
Well, I think it's quite bad. I think, you know, to answer your first question, it is quite bad, because if you think of the advantages England had in these two test matches, although they were missing key players, they included some promising young cricketers who've had plenty of cricket. They've been playing four-day championship matches virtually all summer. The pitches have been okay. Quite a few of them have got runs. The likes of Burns and Pope have scored plenty of runs. Lawrence as well. So, you know, it's disappointing. It's poor that they weren't able to equip themselves against New Zealand, who've had no cricket at all. I mean, they've just been playing amongst themselves. Quite a few of them have come over from the IPL. None of them have had that sort of first-class experience that the England players have had. Admittedly, it's a second-string England side. So, you know, poor performance by England. At the same time, can we win the Ashes? Well, quite a few of those players aren't going to be playing in the Ashes because, you know, Stokes comes back, Wokes comes back, Butler comes back, maybe Moeen comes back. So there's at least four players. Bairstow, maybe him as well.
Ollie Robinson,
you've got someone like Sam Curran, who's played in virtually every test he's played. He's played on the winning side. Another one not available in this series. I think, you know, it's been a bit of mismanagement by England. Why is it that Trent Bolt, who was locked down in the IPL, playing, you know, in his franchise, was still able to play in this test series? And the likes of Chris Wokes, who was player of the year last year and was locked down in the IPL, hasn't been considered. And he has had no less cricket than Trent Bolt, who played in the IPL a little bit, Trent Bolt, true, but he hasn't had any first-class cricket before this second test match, and he bowled really well. Chris Wokes has had less IPL cricket, but nothing really since. It seems kind of bizarre that you've got these cricketers who weren't considered for the test series, now playing for their counties in the Vitality Blast. You know, it just seems all the wrong way around, a bit cockeyed. And so, you know, I don't think it's all gloom and doom, because some very fine cricketers, and maybe Jofra Archer as well, will come back into the first team, hopefully, for the India series.
One name you missed out there in your list of players to come back, of course, is Ollie Robinson. Whether that overshadowed this test match and this test series, they said it didn't, but you never know. You know, you need a clear mind, don't you, to play Test match cricket. And it was one of those distractions that England didn't need. So you're saying it's not as bad as everybody thinks it is. What about, though, at the top of the order? It seems a strange thing to be saying, because if you look at the series, Dom Sibley runs in the second innings at Lord's. Rory Burns got 100. He was England's man in the series, and he made 80 in the second Test match and shared that stand of 70 odd on the first day that actually, you know, should have provided the base for England to score well. I don't know, something about the top of England's order that it just isn't quite right, and I can't even quite put my finger on it. It's that feeling that, I suppose it's that feeling that when good bowlers get going, that they will be able to make those inroads into England's batting. And I think it's that that we saw yesterday. I think the idea that when they're under pressure, there isn't that solidity at the top order. I think that was it, really.
Yeah.
And it feels a little bit like there's the dam is being held back, and any moment it's going to break. And obviously Zach Crawley's problems at the top of the order don't help. You know, he's hugely promising that innings against Pakistan last year, and then very little since. So it seems to me that's what, I don't know why. I mean, that is a problem there. Of course, the middle order is a bit of a problem there as well, but then they do have Stokes and Butler to come back to sort those issues out. But it seems to me that it's going to be that top order that takes England forward. That seems to be the message from the captain, from the coach. After, it's more like carry on. We just need to play better.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a mistake to constantly focus on the Ashes all the time. We said this on the podcast yesterday because, you know, they're a very good side, like New Zealand and India, to beat first. So to focus on the Ashes is a mistake. But if you look at how England won the Ashes in 2011. Under Andrew Strauss, it was due to a very good opening partnership. Andrew Strauss, and of course, Alistair Cook, England's best run maker of all time. Cook made 700 odd runs. Strauss got a couple of hundreds in that series. They had a very experienced, solid batting lineup, but it was led off by those two very experienced, doughty, determined openers who gave a sort of reassurance to England and a frustration and a doggedness to the Australian fast bowlers that they couldn't get through. And that's what England need. And I don't feel that Burns and Sibley offer that enough robustness. You know, they are, you know, okay players. Burns in particular averages mid-40s in county cricket and has consistently scored 1,000 runs for Surrey. And he's made, you know, some reasonable scores in Test cricket. But to me, he looks vulnerable to good bowling, and I don't like him against the short ball, against really good bowlers like Pat Cummins and Hazelwood and so on. Sibley, to me, looks vulnerable. I mean, he tries hard. He sticks in. You know, he can weather periods of good bowling, but he just looks vulnerable to a good ball around off stump. So that is a worry.
Yeah, and also you mentioned going back 2011 when England won the Ashes, that opening partnership they had. They also had Jonathan Trott coming in at number three as well.
Yeah, quite.
And so they really had that solidity at the top of the order. You trusted them. I just feel that England's top order, it very much is fingers crossed. And I think that the point is that will, unless they have a dreadful time of it against India, which is certainly possible, unless they do, that will be where England go. And possibly because it's not obvious what the alternatives are. You think about players who could come in. Well, there's Hamid. People say give him a go, but he's it strikes me, and I've said this before, that he's a player. I know they called him up into the squad, but he needs to have just a slightly better CV after those years of struggle, that you need to see him succeed over a longer period. I know he scored 200s in a championship match earlier in the season, but I think you want that consistent, strong evidence that, you know, his game is back to where it was. Because, I mean, I was in India last time, all that time when he played those three Test matches, and he was excellent. He looked really good on those Indian pitches. So, you know, there is scope there. There is a feeling that he might struggle against the short ball. And, of course, in Australia, which is where England are ultimately heading, they are going to have, you know, they're going to certainly be tested on that front. And, of course, the other person is David Malan, who has played 27. He's played 15 Test matches and averages 27. It's not compelling evidence for a recall, but he is quite a mature international cricketer now because he's played a lot of T20 cricket. So he's been in. He understands the international game, and he's been to Australia before and scored 100. So those are things that could really go in his favour if things go wrong. But of course, last time India were over, David Malan was dropped after not scoring runs at Edgbaston. So those are the issues. And beyond that, it's hard to see England introducing any other players into their squad, into their team. Joe Root was asked afterwards today about the low averages in England's batting order and also some of the techniques of the players. We were talking about the other day about sometimes you look at that England batting order and some of the techniques, it looks as if they were made in Frankenstein's lab. Well, this is what Joe Root had to say about that.
There's been a lot of talk about technique and batting. And my view on it is very much that batting is very individual. There's no right or wrong way of doing it. You look at the best players around the world. You look at a number of players, look at take the top 10, for example. They all have completely different methods of how they play. You look at how they stand, their back pass, where they score their runs. It's all very unique. And I think that's one of the great intricacies of Test cricket and batting and cricket. But it's understanding how that works and how that works consistently well for long periods of time. So for me, it's more of a mental thing. It's managing passages of play well, having clarity in your own game about how you're going to manage certain bowlers, different angles, different conditions, and doing that consistently well over a series or over an innings. And breaking things down into at times 10 over periods and saying, actually, this is quite tough at the minute. We've got to find a way to get through 10 overs and the game will look very different again. And I think that's somewhere where we can be a little bit smarter on occasions. It's somewhere that throughout my career, I've got that horribly wrong on occasions. And as well, you look at the team as a leading run scorer within our squad currently, I feel like I've put a lot of pressure on those guys by not performing myself. And as a captain, you pride yourself on making big scores and leading from the front. And I've not managed to follow through on that. So probably compounded that situation slightly with that. But like I say, ultimately, it's about being really honest about your own performances, looking at your dismissals, looking about how you set up your innings and being better, learning from the opposition as well. I think that's important, learning from the players around you, but having real clarity about where you're going to score your runs against certain bowlers, managing risk on occasions. But it's all about finding ways of managing periods of play for long periods of time. Every single one of those guys has proven that they can score big test runs, and we've all underperformed this week. I think it'd be the wrong time to start panicking and start really trying to rip up the all the hard work that we've done for such a long period of time now. It's something that historically we've done going into major tournaments, historically we've done going into big test series, and it's made things even worse. I think ultimately it's about this group of players taking what's happened this week and making themselves better for it, becoming more resilient off the back of it, and learning some hard lessons, which from time to time you have to be able to do it in this format of the game. And we shouldn't shy away from that. We should be scared of that, front up to it, and come back a better team for it.
This podcast is in association with LV Insurance, and children have suffered more than anyone else during lockdown, so access to sport is absolutely crucial to helping them get back to normality. Today, we're profiling Beaminster Cricket Club in Dorset, who've received a grant from LV General Insurance and the ECB's £1 million Fund for Runs Community Initiative to ensure their three youth cricket teams and All Stars and Dynamos programmes will continue to have paid ECB qualified coaching this summer, as well as an additional full summer cricket school. More than 60 children are set to take part in their All Stars and Dynamos projects, and there is a real focus on inclusivity, with an even 50-50 split between boys and girls attending the sessions. The Summer Cricket School will run for 2 days a week across the entire summer holiday and help children continue their cricketing education in the local area, which is a great initiative. And one thing I used to love, actually, was as a kid, was those cricket camps in the summer, because otherwise you just sat around at home watching Test cricket or anything else that was on, and I was desperate to get out there and play. So these cricket camps, 2 days, 3 days worth, in the sunshine, learning your game with qualified coaches, fantastic.
You know, I used to be a coffee addict. Couldn't function without two double-strength lattes in the morning and another to follow, especially if I was going to the gym or on a cycle. It played havoc with my nervous system. Since I've discovered Mission Teas, that's all changed. I feel energised, but not hyperactive. Mission was founded by Tom Whittle on a 9-month ride through South America. His experience was transformed by the amazing properties of Argentinian teas based around the herbs yerba mate and matcha, renowned for their slow release of energy, and rooibos, famous for its anti-inflammatory effects. Mission now produce a range of herbal teas specially designed for hydration, energy boosts, relaxation, and even sleep. Numerous GB sports stars swear by them, including a number of the England cricket team and some famous footballers too. Mission teas are not only genuinely beneficial, but they're actually delicious and don't leave you with stale coffee breath or constantly needing the toilet. Honestly, I feel totally upbeat, whether in the gym, coaching the kids, or recording this podcast, and I'm sleeping better as well. I highly recommend you try some. Mission are offering listeners of this podcast 20% off your first order if you go to missionuk.com and type in the code CRICKETER20, all one word, at checkout. So that's missionuk.com. Use the code CRICKETER20 and enjoy.
So before the break, we heard Joe Root talking about England's batting lineup, and he said no time to panic. It's not the time to panic. It's funny, actually, you never hear sports people say, actually, it is the time to panic. It is the time to panic. Yeah, it's all going horribly wrong. No, let's all panic. They you know, they all say let's be calm, let's be rational about it. But it does look as if it is a question of these are our players. We just have to play better. And that's the way of it. They might well tinker, and they do have those players to come in. What do you feel about Hamid? We talked about him a bit earlier. I mean, one of the things about the India series, it's in early August, and you know, how much cricket is there for that's these the problem, players to play before the series?
Yeah, that's the problem. I like Hamid. I think he's more orthodox than either Burns or Sibley, and that's a good thing in a way, because in Australia, particularly, and against India too, but you know, in Australia, you need to have an orthodox method, or at least what England haven't been doing, I feel, of these, particularly these young players, is they haven't been waiting to play the ball. There was a stat during that second test, New Zealand test, at Edgbaston, saying that, in fact, I think it was the first test where New Zealand batsmen all played the ball later than their English counterparts. And it sounds an obvious thing to say, but even the best players in the world who have funny techniques play the ball late. Now, I've got some evidence of that, actually. Here's a graphic that I actually copied from the series in Australia, when Australia played India. And it just shows Steve Smith, who, as we all know, has a pretty unorthodox technique, but he does play the ball late. So all those white balls there are his interception points. And as opposed to, compared to Marnus Labuschagne in yellow, but it's just a sort of random example of the fact that even though Steve Smith has a very unorthodox method, he plays the ball late. And that certainly applied also to somebody like Devon Conway as well. So that's something I think that where the England players can really improve. You think about the dismissals that we saw during those series, those two test matches, a lot of players chasing the ball, going for it early, chasing wide balls. The New Zealanders generally, when they were out, they were bowled through the gate, trying to play it late, but a good ball, or occasionally caught at slip. But a lot of edges went down because they were playing it late, whereas the English batsmen at the ball more got the edges and they carried to slip. And New Zealand slip catching was outstanding because there were some flying edges. So I think that's one area that, although they don't have to change their method, they could change their mindset and their approach a little bit and try and play the ball a bit later.
Yeah, England were not so much out bowled in this test series, but they were out batted and they were out caught as well. I mean, this is another sort of worrying aspect. I mean, and New Zealand really showed them up by taking some, you know, sharp catches, and they didn't look like dropping many. And but by contrast, it was always a bit sort of negotiable as far as England are concerned. You know, Joe Root put down a crucial chance on the first day with Will Young early on seven. And there were two drops on the Saturday when England were very ragged in that first hour. Sam Billings was on the field at fine leg, dropped one coming in from the boundary. And then Bracey, who I don't think we're going to see much of in the near future. I mean, he is one who's going to, you know, go back to county cricket and rebuild his confidence possibly a bit after two very difficult test matches. But they England do need to get sharper with their slip catching. And you think someone like Ben Stokes coming back will help them with that, although he is capable of pulling off some blinders, but he also of late dropped quite a lot as well. So that's another area that England need to improve on. I mean, you imagine, you know, the India series or the Australia series, you know, dropping Kohli on seven as they did with Young, or dropping Steve Smith on seven. You're going to have to snaffle those chances when they come along. I mean, what chance do you think that England have of beating India or Australia? I mean, is it possible they could get seriously turned over in both series, or are they much better than they've shown? When they get those players back, do you think that will give confidence to other players as well, to have someone like Ben Stokes in your dressing room? I mean, surely that will give confidence to everyone else as well. It must do, mustn't it?
He's a natural leader. He's a warrior. People will fall in behind him, undoubtedly. Butler as well. Chris Wokes, you know, fantastic cricketer who's hardly played any cricket since last summer, which is a real shame. And I know we had Darren Goff on the Virtual Cricket Club recently saying he'd be working with Chris Wokes and how wonderful a cricketer he is, and he's learning and improving, and let him loose in Australia, he'll produce the goods, because his overseas record isn't great. I think where England are going to fall down is in the spin department. They still haven't got someone who can hold an end as a spinner and take wickets in the second innings, and both Australia and India have that. So their bowling attacks are much more rounded attacks, more versatile. They have bowlers for all conditions, whereas England don't. They're not going to be able to exploit turning pitches or bouncy extra spin pitches later in a test match. So I think that's where they'll fall down. I think England will lose to India and they'll lose to Australia. It'll be quite close. I think England will battle away against India with their own version of cricket and with people to come back in. But India's depth, their variety in their attack, and Australia's resilience and skill, and again, having someone like Nathan Lyon as an extra asset, will just be a bit too strong for an England side which is still trying to find itself.
Jack Leach is England's main spinner at the moment. He didn't get selected for the two matches. I think he quite liked to have bowled on those two pitches. I think he would have controlled it pretty well in that New Zealand first innings. There was just something there, and you know, just that point of difference as well. But England, you know, because of the balance of their side, they felt they couldn't play him. And you know, we've seen in the past that teams who play four out and out pace bowlers have done quite well, and they probably looked at the stats and they thought overall that's the way to go, four pace bowlers and a bit of Joe Root. So Leach has sort of got to somehow force his way back into the side. I think he will play a part against India, because they can balance the side. I hope so too as well. I mean, you would hope so, wouldn't you? Especially say in August, if we have a dry summer, you would hope that Leach gets in there. The interesting thing, of course, is what sort of pitches they're going to play on. And I remember us having this discussion the last time India were over, and you were emphatic about this. You it's interesting. You said that India won't make enough runs. Their batting will be too fallible in English conditions. But I think if we play in the conditions that we've played the last two test matches, with quite dry pitches, and there wasn't much grass around, was there? I think that Indian supporters feel and fear that we're going to play on very grassy pitches. Well, the first two pitches weren't like that. And England say they want to play on these sorts of pitches to prepare for Australia. And that, I think that might well help India
into India's hands.
Well, it will. They will prefer that. I think that's the best way.
Well, they're better equipped to deal with it than they are a green pitch, certainly.
So,
the thing is, you don't want to risk playing. I don't think you want to risk playing on a green surface against India now, because they've got so many good fast bowlers to exploit it.
But they did last time. They had, I mean, they had a decent attack last time. But England just out bowled them in the way that, you know, New Zealand have out fielded, out batted, and out bowled England in this Test series. So you know, that's what you could look at. You back your own quality bowlers like Broad and Anderson and whoever else they want to pick. You know, whether Ollie Robinson comes back in or Overton plays or Stone or Wood or whoever, you back your own bowlers in those sort of conditions. Because the other thing as well, two Test matches are in September as well. One at Old Trafford in deep, you know, in the middle of September. So you don't quite know whether you can control that. You know, there might well be the climatic conditions take over. And of course, the other thing about playing in England is you know, there are days when you play under cloudy skies, under floodlights for half the day, and that can be a real problem for a batting lineup. So there are lots of aspects to it. But if England are true to their word, which is, you know, we want to play on good pitches, then it's going to be difficult for their bowlers to sort of rush through India in the way that, say, they did at Lord's in the last time India were over, where they skittled them twice in what felt like very helpful conditions that match, in which Chris Wokes made 100. So I mean, so where are we? Is for England? Is it all doom and gloom at the moment? It feels like it, isn't it? It's funny, isn't it? You can have a performance like that, and I think after on the back of Lord's as well, where they didn't chase on the final day. I mean, it was a sort of competent draw in the end for England at Lord's, 170 for three, batting out the game. But when you see a game like this, 122 all out, it's amazing, isn't it? It just saps everybody's optimism. Yeah, it saps their optimism, Yoz.
Talking of fast bowlers, and the disappointing series, a fairly innocuous series for Jimmy Anderson, just three wickets at 66. And we've been giving an award each day of this Test series, sponsored by LV Insurance, the hashtag In With Heart Award. And I think for this particular Test match, we should give it to Matt Henry, who the New Zealand fast bowler, who out-bowled, you know, most of his English counterparts in that second Test match. He very rarely plays two Test matches in a row. He's only played one in this series, and yet he took six wickets in the match at about 19. And actually, he's played 14 Test matches in 6 years since his Test debut in 2015. So he hardly ever, if ever, plays two Tests in a row. But he's that super sub who comes in, who bowls immaculately, even though he hasn't had a Test match for a few months. He's never overawed by the situation or the occasion or the opposition. Keeps just chugging away and nipping out wickets. He knocked over England's top order in this second Test match in the second innings. So Matt Henry, for his grit, determination and just wholehearted commitment to the New Zealand cause, he is our In With Heart Award winner for this Test match day.
And of course, now New Zealand move on to Southampton to play the World Test Championship final. I mean, they've brushed England aside. Now it's the really big one. It's what they've come for. I read Ravi Shastri saying this is the biggest Test match ever. World Test, you know, it's I mean, that's quite like Ravi, isn't it? You know, to come out with a statement like that. But it is to be the first ever World Test champions, and India's preparation, you could say, has not been it's probably not been as good as New Zealand's, because New Zealand's sort of battle hardened, and what they've done cleverly as well is they mixed and matched, so they've given lots of players, you know, one game. Some players have had two games, and it's also Henry's an interesting one, because it's thrown up a selection issue for New Zealand. What do they do with their side for the Southampton Test match? I mean, it is one of those good selection issues to have, where you've got people in form vying for a place in the team. Does De Grandhomme come back into the side, or do they go with, you know, four prime quick bowlers? Do they keep in a spinner, or what do they do? Anyway, so we talked about whether England can succeed against India and Australia. Who is the favourite? Who is likely to come out on top when New Zealand take on India in the World Test Championship final, the biggest game of Test cricket ever?
Well, I'm going to say New Zealand. They've been close in two World Cup finals and come second. I think they'll be ultra committed to get this victory in the World Test Championship. They sort of almost sneaked in at the last minute into the final, but they are just so competent. They have so many bases covered. I like the introduction of Patel in this Test match because I think he offers something as well. So he can be a counter to Jadeja in the India side. They've got so many bowlers all looking hot and potent. And hopefully Williamson will be fit. That's a key thing because he missed this last Test match. I mean, obviously he's a fundamental pillar to the New Zealand team. But yeah, I think those two Test matches, the way they've played, Conway coming through as an immaculate looking opener with just an absolute insatiability for runs. I think they've got all the bases covered. It'll be tough. India are a brilliant side with so many match winners, but the way New Zealand still hold together, they're so cohesive. There's so many excellent cricketers who just know what their game is about. I think I'm going to put my money on them.
And there should be a result. Although I looked at the forecast on my weather app, there's a bit of rain around. And this, I think this hot weather is going to break towards the end of the week or middle end of the week, and there's going to be some rain around. But of course, we've got the possibility of 6 days available, the extra day. So, I mean, what you hope is that it's not a draw. You know, we've had all the 2 years of Test Championship, and then we get to the game, and it's a bit of a stalemate. I mean, there can be some quite good pitches at Southampton. It depends what they come up with, isn't it? But let's hope there's a positive outcome. I'm going to be there. I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a fascinating match. I understand there are going to be some spectators in, but not as many as there were at Edgbaston, because that was a test event. And as you say, it was very disappointing that, people did turn up today and cheered whatever action they saw for up to an hour or whatever it was. And so there are going to be some spectators in. Let's hope that they get the type of cricket the game deserves. I mean, I do quite like the concept, I have to say, of the World Test Championship. I like the idea of giving every or most Test matches a different meaning, and you're qualifying, and you're battling for points. It hasn't quite worked out like it this time because of the pandemic, and lots of games have not taken place. But I have to say, I quite like it. And it's in the calendar, isn't it now? That's the other thing. Up until 2031, it is going to continue, which we'll see how it pans out. Let's hope that in a way, that the second edition is a bit more satisfying than the first. And the other thing, of course, is that the Australians are a little bit sore. I mean, they've missed out, haven't they, by a small fraction of a percentage. And of course, what they did is they thrashed New Zealand three times at home not so long ago in the last but one winter. So they'll sort of look on enviously, I think, at the World Test Championship final, and so will England as well.
Yeah, that's true. I'm going to be there as well, working in the ICC production unit, doing the analysis on TV. I'm looking forward to it a lot. And actually, in the Virtual Cricket Club this Wednesday, we have special guests, Simon Dool, representing New Zealand, and Dinesh Kartik, representing India. So we're going to get a debate going in the Virtual Cricket Club to find out who they think are going to win and why. Obviously, they'll back their own teams, but I'm sure they'll have sound reasons for that. And you can join us at the Virtual Cricket Club by going to worldsbestcricketclub.com and experience that debate live at worldsbestcricketclub.com. We'll make a podcast of it the next day as well. So that's Thursday, and the match starts on Friday. And we'll do a podcast, Simon and I, at the end of every day's play in that World Test Championship final at the Aegeus Bowl. So lots to look forward to this week. And we'll be back, as I say, Wednesday, Thursday and Friday for the first day of that Test match. Speak to you then.
Podcast Network.